Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer, and we continue with our annual Critics Week on Soundcheck, and we find that it was an especially good year for books about music in 2005. Our next guest found several titles that curious music lovers would enjoy. Greg Sandow is a composer, critic, and consultant who works with major orchestras. He's also writing a book himself on the future of classical music. Greg, welcome back to Soundcheck.
Well, John, it's a great pleasure to be here on this day of celebration.
Yes, I suppose so. For one thing, we won't be interrupted on tomorrow's Soundcheck like we have been the last 3 days. We may be interrupted yet again if there is a press conference from Mayor Bloomberg and Roger Toussaint of the TWU, but let's forge ahead to the first of the books that we want to talk about, Greil Marcus, Like a Rolling Stone, Bob Dylan at the Crossroads. This is not a book about Bob Dylan. This is a book about one song by Bob Dylan.
It's a book about one song. And typically for Greil, it's also a book about the entire culture and where it was going at that time. You were just playing that song, mm-hmm. Like a Rolling Stone. Now, Greil has this Dylan thing. This is at least the second book he's written about Dylan. Dylan even in chronicles his memoirs, the best music book bar none of the last 2 years. Dylan even quotes Greil about himself.
Wow.
With a little bit of a sense of approval. So I guess Greil is almost official. And like so much of his writing, I would say that he exaggerates. I say this with great affection. If he thinks Masked and Anonymous, that Dylan film from a couple of years ago, is a good movie, I can't understand. I went out and bought the DVD because of this book, and I couldn't take it. But just as an example of the kind of things he does, quite apart from his evocation of the song and many alternate versions, including one in Italian, he has a beautiful passage about the effect that Joan Baez made when she started singing folk music before Dylan came on the scene. I was there myself. I heard Joan Baez in those early days, and Greil really nails it that somebody singing very old English language folk music in the early 1960s in America connected directly with the feeling people were having then that something had to change for the better in America. And the way Greil can connect the way Joan Baez sang those old songs with what was happening in the culture at the time, it's brilliant and informative to me because, as I say, I was there and I only understood it, really, reading Greil.
So not a book about a song then, but a book about...
A song that stands
a watershed.
For multitudes.
Yeah,
yeah, a song that is a watershed. And a great song, too.
So if I run a literary agency, should I be looking for the next writer who can come up with some kind of Dylan tome? I mean, it seems to be a hot topic these days.
No, I would say that's probably been done by now. So... You should try to find out the next big thing.
The next big thing. Beethoven is certainly not the next big thing. He was a big thing a long time ago, but this year there was the book Beethoven, the Universal Composer, by no less a personage than Edmund Morris.
And somehow the New York Times Book Review called me up and said, review it for them. So I read it. I probably otherwise wouldn't have. It's an entry in the Eminent Lives series that succeeds the Penguin Live series, edited by James Atlas. Literary figures write concise biographies of great figures. This is, I believe, the second music one because Peter Gay already did Mozart. And Edmund Morris, Reagan's very folksy biographer, is quite a wonderful writer, and he loves Beethoven deeply. My objection to the book was that he gets very orthodox about classical music analytical things and probably writes over the heads of people who don't really know about classical music.
Yeah, and actually one of the things that I think he sets out to do and tells you he sets out to do early in the book is to write something that the general reading public can sort of understand.
And then he warns you early on that he's going to use technical terms and you should look them up in the glossary. But, you know, I said all this in the review, so let me say something else. The Universal Composer, that is a rather fraught concept now because Beethoven and classical music are not as universal as they were. Early in the book, he has an example of how universal Beethoven is. We're in Harvard Yard in Cambridge. It is snowing. Nobody can get around. And some student puts a loudspeaker in the window and plays the last movement of Beethoven's Fifth. So late in the book, we learn when that happened, 1978. That was before the dethronement of classical music, at least in the media. I tracked once that in 1980, Time magazine had two classical reviews for every pop review. By 1990, it had been reversed. Now, almost no classical music coverage at all. Taking that as a rough measure, 1978 was the time when Beethoven could claim to have some universality in our culture, and it's not clear to me that he would now in the same way. But Edmund Morris hasn't kept up with that.
Well, I have to say, Greg, I was in college in at that time, and you know, I did my fair share of sticking speakers out of windows
and stuff. And it wasn't
Beethoven.
Stuff. No.
It was never Beethoven. I never heard anybody
so
doing
that. I'm being too charitable here. This probably goes back to the 50s.
All right, well, Edmund Morris, noted biographer of American presidents, took on Beethoven. The book was Beethoven, the Universal Composer. But there was much to like in the book, regardless
yes.
of your
yes,
you know,
his,
qualms
his
about
recounting
it.
Of Beethoven's life is very touching, and because he's a real writer, he brings it to life. I enjoyed that part. Absolutely.
All right. Repeating Ourselves, American Minimal Music as Cultural Practice by Robert Finck.
Oh, I'm really
what
happy
the
to
heck?
Get on to this. Okay, Robert Finck is a musicologist. He teaches at UCLA, where the musicology department is run by Susan McCleary and her husband, Rob Walser, the author of The Classic Musicological Study of Heavy Metal. This is not, as Oldsmobile would say, your father's musicology department. And Robert Finck writes a just delightfully lively book, taking issue with the idea that, John, you and I probably grew up on, that minimal music is a kind of modernism, abstract, all about its own processes. And Robert Finck, who I've been emailing with, puts it delightfully in the context of repetitive advertising, the Suzuki method. He tells a story about Suzuki playing a phrase 100,000 times in a row. It took him 25 days. I wonder if he ate or slept. And he recalls debates over the value of Baroque music when it became a fad in the early 60s and finds people saying the same things about Vivaldi and Albinoni as were said about Steve Reich and Philip Glass in the 70s and 80s. He really puts this in a different cultural context, which includes also disco. And the range of reference here is exhilarating. He's a guy who has a lot of fun when he thinks.
All right, so Repeating Ourselves, American Minimal Music as Cultural Practice, takes the American style of minimalism, typified by this
by
piece.
By what we're hearing here.
By Steve
Reich. And says this is not abstract. This is like going to the supermarket the same product 40 times on a shelf.
So it's, in fact, his thesis then is that this music is a mirror of our culture, our society, which is built on repetition in
Absolutely.
Advertising.
And he doesn't think that's bad either.
Okay, here's a little bit of that minimal music from Steve Reich, his music for 18 musicians. All right, now this is American minimal music, minimalism as it's commonly been called. The book is Repeating Ourselves, American Minimal Music as Cultural Practice by Robert Finck. Greg Sandow thinks that this was one of the highlights of 2005, books about music. He makes a connection between this and disco, purely because of the repetition, or is it deeper than that?
Well, everything in this book is deeper than that, but yes, the repetition. As a matter of fact, my favorite musical track of the year, not that it was a this year track, but I loved it so much, is The Love I Lost by Harold Melvin and the Blue Notes, which after 3 minutes of straight pop song segues into about 40 repetitions of the same riff, while Harold Melvin acts like a gospel preacher and the other Blue Notes, I'm sorry, Teddy Pendergrass acts like that, the lead singer, and the other Blue Notes, they act like the congregation.
Mm-hmm.
I love it. A lot of repetition there.
All right, another major book about music in 2005, The Oxford History of Western Music by Richard Taruskin, 6 volumes, $699. Who's this aimed at?
Libraries.
Okay.
Although, you know what? It's a terrific read. I had the unenviable task of reviewing it for the Wall Street Journal. To claim that I would have read it all would probably make Taruskin very happy because he knows I didn't, and I have to admit it. But it is a monumentally smart book, wonderfully written, right at the beginning when he talks about the origins of musical notation and how we know about that. You're on the edge of your seat reading that. That's a tribute to his pure skill as a writer.
He is also known as something of a professional gadfly. Is he as provocative here as
Oh, he's totally provocative. And a subtext of the book for anybody who knows musicology and musicologists is who he quotes approvingly and who he does not. He has been known to go up to people at musicological conferences and ask them if they have looked themselves up in the index. The book is, and this is where it begins to get a little tiresome, a 5-volume exercise, because the 6th volume is just an index,
right,
in one-upsmanship. And he also, I have to say, sometimes
that's good that classical music can indulge in that sort of thing.
Absolutely. It's very human, very lively, and he makes mistakes. Sometimes he gets out of his culture, his comfort zone, and he makes these colossal mistakes about things that I, by chance, happen to know and he doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
Not to say that he doesn't know 10 million things that I don't, but...
Well, we're talking with Greg Sandow, the composer, critic, writes for the Wall Street Journal, blogs at artsjournal.com, and I don't want to leave the topic of books about music without mentioning your book in progress at artsjournal.com, which is sort of a book as performance art.
Oh, God, yes, it's a performance. I'm not sure it's art, but it's a performance. Every 2 weeks, I have to come up with a new episode of them. We call them episodes. We think of it as a TV miniseries. And I missed my deadline last time. I took the authority of the performer to say, I'm doing it late this time because I'm not staying up till 6 a.m. another time. The idea is to jumpstart a book on the future of classical music and also get a lot of feedback, which has been tremendously helpful, both the stuff that's posted on the site and the stuff that comes to me privately. It will be a stronger book, and it will address the needs of the field a lot better, mm-hmm, because the field is talking to me about it as I write it.
All right. Well, there were obviously a number of interesting books about classical music, the Richard Taruskin tome, the Beethoven book by Edmund Morris, but also Grill Marcus's book about Bob Dylan, Robert Fink's book about American minimalism. Greg Sandow, thank you for taking us on a little look back at the best of books in 2005. Good to see you again. Happy holidays.
A pleasure, John. You too.
In a moment, we expect to go across the street to City Hall for another press conference about the end of the transit strike. But that'll do it for today's show. Let us know what you thought were the big stories of 2005. Email us, soundcheck@wnyc.org. Tomorrow, we wrap up our year-end review with a look at the year in rock with Blender's senior editor Ann Powers and the year in dance from Twyla Tharp to Alvin Ailey. Soundcheck's technical director is Irene Trudell. Our program is produced by Allison Lichter and Brian Wise with Robin Edgerton. Our senior producer is Gisele Regatow. Our executive producer is Chris Bannon. I'm John Schaefer. Join us again at this time tomorrow for another Soundcheck. We expect to be uninterrupted tomorrow here on New York Public Radio. Stay with us now for fresh air and for ongoing strike coverage here at 93.9 WNYC.